our presentation content and turn things over to your session presenter. Tracy?
Thank you, Jean. Give the presentation a moment. There it is. Load up. All right. Well, welcome, everyone. I appreciate you all joining us on short notice after the interim final rule was signed and the pre-publication version was launched. And so we wanted to give this presentation so that folks could become familiar with the rule and sort of the process that we'll be using going forward. The presentation will cover a number of topics. We'll start with some key terms, some new vocabulary for folks to learn that have to do with the new rulemaking, and exactly the goal of the interim final rule, why we're doing this rule and why we're doing it as on an interim final basis. Then the next few slides will go through some of the history as far as how we got to this point, how used airbags have been regulated under RCRA, and how the Takata recall and the DOT preservation order and Takata's bankruptcy and the amended order have interacted with sort of the landscape of how airbags are regulated. We'll talk about the serious problem of diverting recalled airbags back into cars, and then we'll talk about some of the specifics of the interim final rule and what the next steps are. So just to help orientate folks, and we'll be getting into more detail when we get towards the end of the presentation, we have some new terms that will be that are used in the rule. Airbag waste refers to hazardous waste airbag modules and airbag inflators, and on the next slide I'll show you a blow-up presentation of the difference between an airbag inflator and airbag module. Airbag handler is a person who generates airbag waste. That's generally the auto dealers, but it would be anyone who would be removing the used airbags from the vehicle. An airbag collection facility for the purposes of the rule is a facility that collects and stores airbag waste for more than 10 days and is under the control of the vehicle manufacturer, their authorized representative, or under the control of an authorized party administering a remedy program in response to a recall. Designated facility is the same term as is already in the regulations as far as a RCRA-permitted facility or that EPA or the authorized states has designated as able to accept hazardous waste, or specifically in this case, hazardous waste, that airbag hazardous waste. And then 261.4J is the new citation for the hazardous waste conditional exemption. One important thing to note for folks who may be somewhat new to the RCRA area, this is an optional provision that exempts airbag waste from certain hazardous waste requirements while they're at the handler and during transport to the collection facility, provided certain conditions are met. That means if folks want to continue handling their airbag waste the way they're currently complying with, that's all right. The idea here is to provide an alternative for folks to use that is expected to make the airbag waste handling easier and achieve sort of the goals of the rule. And then this diagram is an expanded version of one type of airbag module and explaining where the airbag inflator is contained inside the airbag module. So the module itself is the entire unit, which includes the casing, the inflator inside, as well as the airbag cushion. The airbag inflator is just the metal canister that contains the propellant that is used to inflate the airbag. So both airbag modules and airbag inflators are covered by the rule when the exemption is applied. So why are we doing this interim final rule? Well, basically we want to make sure that the hazardous waste regulations are structured in such a way, number one, that there's no impediment under RCRA to the swift removal of the recalled airbag inflators from vehicles. The waste management aspects of the Takata airbag inflator management is really only a small part of the picture, but it's the part that EPA has responsibility for, and we want to make sure that we're doing our part to make sure these Takata airbag inflators are removed from vehicles as quickly as possible. We also need to make sure that the removed airbag inflators and airbag modules, in other words, airbag waste, are managed safely during the accumulation and transport and are tracked to the destination. We want to make sure that there is a record that these defective airbag inflators get to where they're going and confirmation that, they did so. We also want to make sure that the airbag waste is properly disposed of at a RCRA hazardous waste facility in a timely manner, and that long-term storage of the airbag waste is, discouraged. And then finally, most importantly, is that the recalled airbag inflators do not become diverted back into vehicles, you know, where they would be posing the most direct risk to, public health. We also want to note that although we are, with this interim final rule, providing alternative standards for auto dealers and other entities, it does not change the, basic obligation for safe management and disposal of, the airbag waste. And why are we doing this as an interim final rule? It's really an issue where every day counts. Because the, problem with the airbag inflators increases over time, especially when exposed to high temperature and high absolute humidity, you know, it really is, as one source said, it's a ticking time bomb. There was, for example, one case of a, man who was killed 2 days before his, car was scheduled to be repaired. So anything we can do to help increase or maintain the pace of the Takata recall is, something that will help protect, human health. Therefore, we are promulgating this airbag exemption under the Administrative Procedures Act good cause exemption, which will be effective immediately upon a publication. There will be a 60-day comment period, so folks will have the opportunity to comment on this rule, and that those public comments will help us determine if further revisions or clarifications are needed to the exemption. But in the meantime, the exemption would remain in effect federally. So now we start the series of slides that, backs up a little bit from today's interim final rule and kind of gives some context with the history of how the regulations have applied to airbags. Gas-generating airbag systems, and this includes both the recalled Takata and non-Takata systems, contain an explosive propellant that causes the airbag waste to exhibit a hazardous waste characteristic and therefore would be hazardous waste when they're discarded. There are, however, a number of different RCRA exemptions and exclusions that can apply depending on how the airbag waste is managed. And we did want to note that the one that the July 19th, 2018 memo that many folks will be familiar with is still in effect, and this exemption is in addition to that. But for Takata, the used airbags that are removed from the vehicles, absent this rule, must be managed as hazardous waste when they're discarded. And we'll talk a little bit about what we mean by when discarded in, a moment. So the Takata recalls themselves, it's unprecedented in, their size. They're still ongoing through, next year, but when they're completed, up to 70 million airbag inflators will be affected. There have been at least 15 deaths in the U.S. because of the, defect in these Takata airbags and, hundreds of injuries and 22 deaths worldwide. The specific defects, for those who aren't familiar, is with the propellant that's used in the airbag, the phase-stabilized ammonium nitrate, PFAN, degrades over time, and especially when exposed to high temperatures and humidity, which causes it to react more violently than it should, which can rupture the canister and, basically produce shrapnel that can injure or, kill the occupants, even, in a relatively minor accident. Given the situation, the recall's been going on since 2015, why are we doing this rule now? Well, until recently, this rule hasn't been needed because all Takata airbag inflators that have been collected have been fallen under a Department of Transportation preservation order, which means that they had to be stored. They could not be disposed of. So they would not fall under RCRA hazardous waste regulations because they haven't been discarded. So basically up until this year, these recalled airbag inflators have been collected and stored by Takata without being subject to RCRA requirements. But once the preservation no longer applies to these airbags, including the ones that TOTA has collected, then they must be managed as hazardous waste. So what changed this year? There's two major things that have kind of changed the landscape of the waste management system for airbags. Takata went through a bankruptcy proceeding, which ended in February, went into effect in April. And as a result, the financing for the recall has shifted to the original equipment manufacturers, the auto manufacturers, rather than Takata. The bankruptcy did reserve enough money for Takata successor company to dispose of all the airbags they had collected until that point. But from now on, the collection of the airbags by Takata will fall under the preservation order, but would be financed by the OEMs. And then also, the preservation order has been amended, allowing Takata to start drawing down on that stored universe of airbag inflators. While there is still a significant number that are subject to preservation order, there is the opportunity now for making sure that the bulk of the inflators can go to their final disposal scenario. So this has kind of changed how the landscape of how the recall works. Auto dealers can still use the Takata successor company, and which would be covered by the preservation order, and continue to manage their airbags in that way. But it's the OEMs that will be paying Takata for this service. Absent the interim final rule, if the OEMs choose instead to directly dispose of the inflators, then the dealers would be potentially subject to hazardous waste generator requirements. And the concern is that this could have a chilling effect as far as the pace of the airbag replacements. And it also creates a system which would provide an incentive for the long-term storage of the recalled inflators, which is less preferable from a risk perspective than the final disposition of the airbags. Another problem is the potential for diversion of recalled airbags. There has been at least one case where there's been a serious injury from an airbag that's been removed from one vehicle used to repair another vehicle. And in these cases, there is no record. There's no way of the owner knowing that their vehicle may have a defective airbag. And also, these are also the airbag inflators that would be more likely to be exposed to heat and humidity and with the problem of degradation. Some OEMs have commissioned salvage vendors to buy up the recalled airbags from salvage yards and send them for destruction. But the way the DOT preservation order is structured, that these airbag inflators wouldn't be covered by the preservation order. So that once the determination is made by the vendor that they fall under the recall, that they would be subject to hazardous waste requirements. So in order to address both concerns about impeding the repairs of the vehicles and the potential for diversion, the interim final rule promulgates a new conditional exemption for airbag waste, provided that the handler sends it either to a RCRA designated facility or to an airbag collection facility and also meets the conditions for the exemption. Specifically at the dealer, tried to model these conditions over the current industry practices to make sure that the exempted waste is managed safely and is destroyed and not diverted back into vehicles. So there's a maximum of 250 modules or airbag inflators that can be stored at the airbag handler. This is how much can be accumulated at one time. It's not a generation limit. In some cases, a dealer may be sending shipments off every 2 weeks, some maybe once a month, but it's basically the total number of airbag modules or inflators, hazardous waste airbag waste that can be stored is 250, with a limit of 180 days. The airbags must be packaged and shipped in a container designed to address the risk posed by the inflators, which under current practices is you basically put it back into the box that the original part is shipped in, or you can also meet other DOT-approved containers. There is a requirement that the airbags be labeled airbag waste, do not reuse, to make sure that there is no accidental diversion back into cars, and a requirement that shipping records be and confirmation of receipt be maintained for 3 years. This doesn't have to be in hazardous waste manifest. Ordinary business records, such as bills and ladings, are sufficient, and we do allow for electronic records as an option, but there has to be some information trail as far as where the airbags were sent and that they were received. And then as far as what happens once they reach their destination, the RCRA designated facility or the airbag collection facility then acts as the RCRA generator for the purposes of the regulation. So that's where the reporting would happen. If we're talking about the airbag collection facility, they would need to fill out the hazardous waste manifest, and all the other generator requirements would apply at that point. In addition, the regulation specifically makes it clear that the reuse of recalled airbag modules or airbag inflators is prohibited as a form of sham recycling under 261.2G. And then we also, in this interim final rule, included in the scope of the exemption all airbag waste, not just Takata airbag waste. Takata is the reason for the urgency behind this rulemaking, and the reason we're doing it as an interim final rule. But having set up a system for collecting airbag waste, it made sense to include all airbag waste, not just the Takata, because if there would be confusion over it, and you'd also have the potential of an unintended consequence that if you had a small volume of non-Takata airbag waste, it may fall into this very small quantity generator and could be diverted to the municipal waste stream, which is not appropriate. Note that, as I mentioned before, the exclusions and exemptions that might apply to non-Takata, non-defective airbag modules and inflators could still apply. This scope just allows folks, if they choose to manage all their airbag waste together, to do so under the rule. So next steps is, we don't have a date yet, but we expect the interim final rule, which is on the web as a pre-publication version, to be published in the Federal Register shortly, and it will go into effect federally when it's published. There will be a 60-day comment period for folks that would start with that publication date, and we would use these comments to determine if we need to do any further revisions. Right now in the reg agenda, where our schedule is to publish a final rule by September of next year. That may change depending on the public comments, but it's our intention to meet or beat that deadline for a final rule. But in the meantime, we will work with states on implementing the rule. States can be more stringent than the federal requirements. But we believe that, you know, because of the circumstances, the states will be amenable to quick adoption or recognition of the federal requirements in order to help facilitate the airbag recall. All right, and that is the end of my formal presentation. And I have some folks in the room who are going to be helping with questions. Mary Beth Sheridan is here, and she'll help read some of the questions for answering, and I may call in other folks on the room depending on what the topic is.
Yeah, so the first question is from John, and I think Christy's going to answer it. It is kind of technical about the risk of is the risk of fragmentation higher than normal when inflators are in a fire? Given the fragmentation risk in fire, would Takata's recalled inflators not meet the definition of a Division 1.2 explosive as defined in 49 CFR 173.50 and 173.53, and therefore meet EPA's definition of hazardous waste under 261.23A8? If not, why not? Why only 261.23A6?
So at the time of publication, the inflators are not considered class 1 by DOT. They're considered class 9, so they're not considered Division 1.2 explosives, so they don't meet the definition of 40 CFR 261.23A8. In terms of the risk of fragmentation in a fire, the risk of deployment of the propellant is the same as any inflator would be in a fire. There does come a temperature where the propellant will detonate for any inflator, and that's not increased with the Takata inflators, but since some of the Takata inflators have the potential to fragment, that fragmentation risk is present, but the percentage of inflators that fragment don't increase if they're in a fire versus if they were in a car.
Right. Well, and the potential of for fragmentation is also part of the reason why we specifically require the container requirements.
Okay. The next question is from Kyle, and the question is, will airbag waste, the airbag waste definition be expanded to include pyrotechnic devices such as seatbelt pretensioners?
Right now, it's just limited to the airbag waste. We do have an explicit request for comment on whether we should expand that to include other propellant-actuated safety devices. It was more important to get the rule out quickly than based on the information we had on airbags. If folks would like to expand it to include other types of similar safety devices, it would be helpful to provide information on those, and we'll consider that as we determine how to craft the final rule, the final rule.
Scott asks, is there an expected date yet for publication in the Federal Register?
No, we don't have a date yet. It usually does take a few weeks, and with the holiday, I'm not sure how that will impact it. One thing we can do is, to the extent we have the contact information, we can add folks to our email distribution list so that once the rule is published, we can... you know, you'll get it as get an email as soon as it's published.
What documentation, Rusty asks, what documentation is required to demonstrate being an authorized representative of a vehicle manufacturer?
That's a question I think we might want to defer to follow-up clarifications or FAQs. Basically, we do believe that the OEMs will be sort of working with their dealers on how best to, how as a company they'll best to manage their airbag waste. The idea of a collection facility is basically allowing for an intermediate stop before it goes to the final destination facility that would still fall under the RCRA regulation. So that's a good question. We can follow up on that.
And he also asked, how are Takata airbags identified versus non-Takata airbags?
Mm.
I mean, there's a list on DOT's website of
right.
all recalled Takata airbags.
Right. So I think the auto dealers who are doing repairs as part of the recall will be aware of the whether it's a Takata airbag. Again, the rule does apply to both the Takata and the non-Takata airbags.
Okay. John asks, how long will airbag handlers have to procure containers that mitigate the hazard?
Well, again, as my understanding is that generally when shops do the repair, they'll have the new part coming in an appropriate container for managing the airbag inflator. So it's my understanding that it's common practice just to use that container.
And those containers are DOT approved for this hazard.
Yeah, right. for managing it.
So, because he also asked a follow-up question that's related. What is the acceptance criteria for providing a container, for proving a container mitigates the hazard?
Right.
And it would be that it meets the DOT classification for this container.
Mm-hmm.
And there's his last question is, do cardboard boxes mitigate the risk of inflators fragmenting and fire? I don't know if, Christy, if you can expand on that.
I mean, I know that the DOT required packaging for the recalled inflators involves packaging individual inflators in cardboard boxes. I don't know that necessarily any cardboard box would meet that criteria. I think it's a special box, but that is what is required under the Class 9 requirements.
Okay. And then Penny asks, what about pre-recall airbags in vehicles sitting in salvage yards?
Well, again, those inflators that are in the vehicles, that kind of touches on airbag inflators that are in vehicles that are being scrapped or considered part of the vehicle, so they don't fall under the hazardous waste regulations when the whole vehicle is being scrapped. If those airbag inflators are removed from the vehicles, and can't be reused or fall under one of the exemptions, that's where they would be considered a hazardous waste and potentially would be eligible for this exemption.
David asks, can you provide a list of the states that have their own authority? So I think this is in regards to, we've talked about states.
Most states have implementing authority for the RCRA program. It's easier to say the ones that don't is Iowa and Alaska, as well as some of the territories also don't have implementing authority.
Lisa asks, how is EPA planning to disseminate information to auto dealers?
Well, this webinar is one way. Well, we also have been working closely with DOT and making sure that the word gets out through their contacts as well.
Jeanette asks, at what point in the process are airbag inflators considered to be a hazardous waste? When they are managed by the airbag handler, at the airbag collection center? These are both questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm wondering if transporters managing the airbags from one leg of the journey to the other are considered to be managing hazardous waste.
The airbags waste would not be subject to the hazardous waste requirements while they're at the handler and during transport to the next stage. They'd be exempt from 262, 263, those parts of the hazardous waste regulations. They would still have to meet the DOT requirements for HAZMAT, the Class 9, as Christy said, but it would not be a hazardous waste transporter. The transport from the airbag collection facility to the destination facility, that would be subject to full hazardous waste requirements, including hazardous waste manifest.
Phil asks, is there a list of make and models of which cars available may have the Takata airbags?
I believe DOT's website does have that information.
We have a link to the DOT website on our website, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you go to the website that's included in the resources for this webinar, and go down to additional resources, you'll find that link.
But there are 19 different vehicle manufacturers that are affected, so it's a wide range of vehicles that are affected.
Joe asks, you have mentioned several times the containers that the inflator should be shipped in. Can you describe those containers? Are they steel containers or wood?
I believe it's a special kind of cardboard container generally is how the airbags are currently being shipped, and that's what would continue under this rule.
I think like steel drums are also acceptable, but that's more stringent than what's required.
Right. But again, I think the key point is that we're not going above what DOT requires already for the Dakota inflators, basically.
Cynthia asked, will there be an official list of the cars that contain the airbags? So we are referring people to the DOT website for that. But she also said, what's the time of manufacture? And I don't... It spans quite a number
of
years.
It's over the 20-year period, I believe.
Early 2000s are the earliest ones affected.
Right, we think the early 2000s.
But the actual years and makes and models are all on the DOT website.
They're all on the DOT website.
Yeah.
So if you even Google DOT Takata recall, you'll get that. Mark asks, if pre-tensioners are not included in this interim rule, do they fall under the 250 maximum allowed in storage?
No, they would be considered a separate waste stream.
And Penny asks, will salvage yards still be able to send vehicles through a car crusher with intact airbags?
Yes, that's one of the things that was clarified in that July memo that I said it still remains in place.
Todd asks, how do handlers demonstrate the length of time airbags have been accumulating?
They can use any sort of log or label. There's no specific requirement as far as how that's documented.
And Cynthia asks, what are the dangers in recycling, such as shredding and dismantling?
Well, whether it's a Takata airbag or even a non-Takata airbag, there is an explosive propellant inside the airbags, especially if you're talking about large volumes. It is appropriate to have it done at a RCRA facility that can address that explosive risk.
Okay, and Kyle says, CFR Title 49, Section 173.1666I, so this is DOT requirements, allows for a metal drum to be used for accumulation and shipment under certain conditions, vented and not more than halfway full. Does this shipping requirement still mitigate the fragmentation hazard for recalled devices?
So, again, we are deferring to DOT on the specific shipping requirements for the Takata airbags. Whether it falls under this exemption or if it falls under the preservation order, it's the DOT requirement. So I do believe
that the vented drums, no more than halfway full, are acceptable for use for some Class 1 explosives. So as long as these are still Class 9 per DOT, then that would also be acceptable, I believe.
Right. But I guess the most important point is that we're not speaking for DOT on this. This is based on our understanding, and we'll, however DOT says is the proper way of shipping these is what we're deferring to.
Catherine asks, because airbags handled outside of the Takata process are being granted an exemption but not an exclusion, the airbag volumes affect the generator classification of the remover side, such as an example, the dealer. Is this correct?
No. If the airbag, whether they're Takata or non-Takata airbags, are managed under the exemption, they're exempt from the counting requirement, so they do not have to count towards the generator status.
Roberto asked, does EPA anticipate that authorized states will adopt this exemption?
Yes.
Joe asks, what conditions would make these an oxidizer? How are these inflators an oxidizer but not regarded as a fragmentation hazard?
In the RCRA regulations, oxidizers are regulated as ignitable hazardous waste. They're not part of the reactive hazardous waste regs. Some of the chemicals in the propellant are oxidizers. That's why they're considered oxidizers.
Todd asks, are labels required on every box, or can it go on the shrink wrap around the full palette?
I think that is an area where we can talk about doing further clarification, but the key is that it's clear that the airbags are to be disposed of and not reused. So I think we should follow up on that, but I think it does make sense that as long as the airbags are all within the same container and within the same pallet, that you know, as long as that bulk is appropriately labeled, that makes sense.
All right, Sean asks, can airbags that have not been used, installed on a vehicle, but are to be disposed of at TSDF be managed under this interim final rule?
I guess as long as they meet the definition of airbag waste, even though that they would normally fall under another exclusion, folks can always, over-comply.
Stacy asks, would this rule also apply to new excess Takata inflators that have not been installed yet and will not or cannot be installed?
That's really the same question, I think. For airbags that have never been installed in the vehicle, those are considered commercial chemical products, and they've also haven't been, driven around and exposed to the heat and humidity. And so that falls under a certain exclusion. However, if folks would rather just manage all their airbag waste together, they can do that. That is an option.
David asks, how do we confirm after the interim final rule is issued which states will concur with the final rule changes? Basically, which states will adopt the final rule?
I mean, we'll be working with the states and tracking that, but folks are actually, this goes in general for any RCRA requirement, are always encouraged to double check with the state, because states can have additional requirements or more stringent requirements.
Sandra asks, is EPA actively working with states to ensure they will promptly adopt, allow these federal rules to govern?
We've already given one presentation to state representatives, and we'll continue to reach out to folks about encouraging adoption and making sure they have all the tools they need to do so.
And then I don't think we can answer this question, but John asks, how would the oxidizer get out of the inflator's metal housing and then separate from the fuel it's bonded to such that it's an oxidizer hazard?
I think that might be a
follow-up. I think there are series of other related questions from the same person, so we might need to just follow up.
Okay, and that, I believe we've answered all of the other questions.
All right. Well, thank you all very much. Again, thank you for joining us on short notice. Keep an eye out for the publication of the final rule. We'll be taking the email addresses for folks who've signed up and registered, and we'll add you to our notification list, so that once the rule is published, you'll get a direct notification from us. And if other questions come up in the meantime, do feel free to contact us directly. We are happy to talk with you. We'll also talk about whether to memorialize some of these questions and answers in a sort of FAQ document, so that would be available for future reference. Does anyone else in the room have anything? All right. Well, thank you all very much, and appreciate you calling in.
All right. Thank you very, very much. Let's walk through just a few quick final reminders before we close out today's live broadcast. As we noted at the start of today's session, the presentation materials are already available to download. A number of you were asking when those would be available. Well, you can actually get to them right now. If you follow the links on the middle right of your screen under related URLs, you'll see a link to something called Seminar Resources. You can click on that and press the Browse To button, or simply click the link that I've included in the Q&A stream. And on that page, you'll be able to access some of the websites that were highlighted, including EPA's site on this topic and the DOT link that was referenced earlier. You'll also be able to find a copy of the presentation materials. As noted, contact information for our presenters and organizers are also available on the seminar homepage. So if you do want to follow up with questions, you can certainly find their name and information there and reach out to them. And then I would ask each of you to take just a brief moment to fill out our online feedback form to let us know what you thought of today's delivery, both in the method that we used to deliver it as well as the content that was covered. We often get requests for CEUs or PDHs for these sessions. While we don't offer those types of credit hours, you can obtain a participation certificate for your own records by filling out the online feedback form. Just follow the link to that feedback form, check the box at the bottom to certify you were here for the whole session, and then once you send in your feedback, you'll immediately have access to a certificate that you can either print or save for your own records. If you happen to join in a group from one room, each person can fill out that feedback form on their own to get their own certificate, regardless of whose registration you use to access today's session. Today's webinar was recorded, and you'll automatically receive an email with information on how you can play it back on demand. And with that, I want to thank the over 100 individuals who joined us for today's live session. This will be the formal conclusion for our broadcast. Thanks so very much.